Breakfast with Matt and Alex on Triple J.
Here we are in a podcast. Thank you very much for taking the time and the bandwidth to download it and the brain cells at times. Certainly not this morning, though. We had some excellent guests in, one of which remains with us from the Sydney Swans, Brandon Jack. Hello.
Hi, guys. Thanks for letting me stick around.
No, it's interesting to have you join us for like the majority of the show, even though you're not on air for most of this podcast. You're behind the scenes. What'd you learn?
I got a pretty good insight. Jono, your producer there, was very helpful in showing me how the show all works behind the scenes. And it was good to learn.
As expected?
Pretty laid back, actually. I thought it might be a stressful environment, but pretty
laid. There'd be from what I saw, people in suits running about, their hair out. Why did they say that? Quickly.
Small operation, but it works really well.
Oh, very nice. Well, it's very nice of you to hang out with us this morning. We got a text from someone today saying that we may have actually played footy against each other in the past.
This is correct. I'm aware you played for Sydney Uni back in the day.
I did a couple of years ago. Found myself, and I'm pretty sure it was due to a long injury list. Found myself in the NEAFL team, which plays against...
What's the NEAFL team?
So it's Northeast AFL.
Yes.
And that's the one that's... is the step below the AFL where, you know, Brandon and the Swans reserves would play, Gold Coast reserves playing it as well. What do you mean, was I starting?
Did you start in that game?
Yeah.
In the team? That's pretty good, man.
Well, there's four on the bench. Sometimes I start on the bench. But this was crazy because we played at the SCG before, I think, Swans St Kilda.
Yeah, I think it would have been. I do remember this. There's a fair chance I was younger at that time as well, maybe 17 or 18, and you might have bullied me around or something. So
absolutely not the case.
I find that hard to believe.
Because I remember distinctly one part of the game where I'm just running around, and it's certainly playing against like an AFL-trained unit like the Swans is quite devastating because they use their body and strength throughout the game. Like there's no sort of switching off. You're concentrating the whole time, and as someone who's big amateur, that's quite interesting to see. So much so I was just running along at one stage. The ball was probably 50 meters away, got a hip and shoulder from
just straight
a guy
into
just
the back
onto the ground. I'm like, hey, the ball's, it's like, mate, man, this is the game. Just get your
Getting
head in
pushed
it.
Pushed around all the time.
So that was it. I got the job in the fourth quarter. Tony Armstrong was tailing us up a little bit, getting a lot of possession. So I got put on him in a nullifying role, which was a bit stressful because he can run quite fast and quite long. Yes. Who do you find difficult to play against maybe in intra-club matches?
Yeah, we got a number of good small defenders that play on me. Nick Smith, All-Australian last year. He's a handy player. And then we got some young guns as well. Zach Jones, he'd be one of those blokes who'd put the hip and shoulder on you midway across the ground when the ball was 50 metres away.
Well, can I ask about the Swans? And this is going to get slightly AFL-centric.
Yeah,
so
I'm already being lost in this, by the way.
Where the Swans, people like yourself and Kieran Jack, your brother, who sort of, I don't know, was even a rugby league background. Luke Parker had such an incredible year before getting injured and was picked up in the draft at like 50-something, I was reading recently. Where do the Swans scouts go and find their talent?
They do a great job. We've got a lot of rookies that are now on the senior list, so they recruit from different areas. Myself played rugby league. We got a guy who's just come over from Ireland, actually. He's playing his first year of AFL football, Colin O'Riordan. He's a great lad. The recruiters do a great job, and once you get into the club, they really upskill you pretty quickly and
so
get you ready.
So you were playing rugby league for your school, I assume?
Correct. Yeah, I played rugby league. My dad, Gary, was a very famous rugby league player, and I played league until the age of 15 and then just made a kind of snap decision and go and play AFL.
Was it part of the NAB Star Search show?
No, I wasn't. I wasn't good enough for any of that stuff. I just played local local leagues in Division 2 for a couple of years.
Yeah,
then you got
sure.
the call up. It's incredible, man.
How does the old man feel about now both his sons in the AFL rather than his beloved league?
I think he's more of a fan now of the AFL than anything. It was Kieran kind of broke the ice, and when I transitioned, he just accepted it. So.
Is he? I mean, he was very successful, but he must have also seen a lot of people have only brief stints in their sporting career. Did he? Has he nailed into you an importance of having a backup, or has he always been like, don't worry about it, just commit to football and do your best?
That's exactly right. Mum and Dad were huge growing up. We all had to really put in time at school and go to university, and I'm very grateful that they instilled that in us from a young age. So love my footy, but I'm aware that there's much more to life than that, and it won't last forever.
Oh, that's sensational, man. Well, it's been awesome hanging out with you today. All the best for the weekend as this is getting recorded. Brandon potentially play against the Pies this weekend, which will be a big one. And who knows, we might see you at Triple J again sometime.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Enjoy the podcast.
Yeah.
Hope you're well. Matt and Alex are with you, and we woke up to some pretty bad news. Events happening in Brussels, Belgium, around about 8 8 a.m. their time, which is 12 hours ago,
which is still today in Brussels. Yeah, so it happened if you're in Brussels this morning, which is quite terrifying. At the moment, 34 people are confirmed to have perished in two separate explosions at the airport and the train station in Brussels. And to find out a bit more, we've managed to get onto Sophie, who is originally from New Zealand, living and working in Brussels at the moment. Thanks so much for joining us from Brussels, Sophie.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Sophie, can you tell us where you are right now?
Currently, it's 8:15 in the evening here, and I'm just sitting in my apartment in central Brussels with my boyfriend, just keeping indoors and watching the news as to what's kind of unfolded today.
Because there's been instruction by the Belgian Prime Minister, hasn't there, to kind of stay locked down with everything.
Yeah, indeed. The Belgian authorities have been issued a public announcement that people should stay indoors. I mean, earlier today in the aftermath of when it happened, because as you said before, it happened 12 hours ago, the first explosion, which was at Brussels Zaventem Airport. And then the second one occurred about an hour later at 9 o'clock, which was during peak rush hour time as well in Brussels. People who were out and about were told to stay put. So, for example, a number of my friends who work in offices around Brussels were sitting inside with their office doors locked all day. And for me, I was still at home, so we've stayed inside for most of the day. But, you know, Brussels, it's a wonderful place in many ways. It's really like a global village. You know, you've got people from all different cultures and nationalities. It's the home of the political capital of Europe, so there's so many EU institutions there. There's different types of professions there. It's a huge melting pot, and so that also means that the airport is frequently used by heavy traffic, and also Malbec Metro Station. It's right down the road from, you know, the EU institutions, so it's a heavily populated area of people going on their daily commute to work. I mean, it's very surreal. I was actually just catching the metro from Malbec station a couple of days ago, and now this has happened. So
well, how's the vibe been over the last few days, Sophie? Because there was only a couple of days ago in Brussels that a suspect from the Paris attacks was arrested in the town. Did that bring calm at the time? Did that sort of, and you relaxed? Did it heighten the tension?
It's been a mix, to be honest, because on one hand, everyone was very, very pleased that finally Salam had been apprehended, because he's been Europe, if not the world's most wanted man, in the wake of the Paris attacks last year. And, you know, he was found only 500 metres away from his original residence in Brussels. But it's been, people have been optimistic, but at the same time, you know, the Belgian authorities have been very concerned that an attack of this nature, of, you know, a terrorist attack, could be happening at some stage. I mean, even last night, and some are speculating right now, that the attacks today could be a reprisal of his arrest, because, or it even got moved up earlier, because it's Easter, you know, holidays next week here, so there's going to be a huge amount of people who are travelling to go to sunny places in Belgium right now on family holidays, but they might have moved it up. But again, this is just speculation. You know, no one's confirming too much right now, because they want to be sure that they know what happened. I mean, there's manhunts in Brussels going on as we speak right now to try and apprehend a suspect from today.
How long have you been living in Brussels, Sophie? And also, just does this sort of thing affect you wanting to stay there?
I've lived in Brussels. I moved here with my boyfriend from Amsterdam about 5 years ago, so we've been here for a while, and I love Brussels. It's a city, you know, they say, there's a saying of Brussels, ma belle, Brussels, my beautiful. I live in a beautiful apartment in a lovely neighbourhood that's surrounded by parks and lakes and forests, and have my local cafe and restaurants, and have a wonderful, wonderful expat family. And, you know, what I think today has undoubtedly been a very dark and tragic day here. I mean, even from being inside my door, you know, inside my house, we are very fortunate that we have a little garden outside. And usually you hear the laughter of children reverberating in the courtyard here. But today all you hear are sirens and, you know, helicopters, which, has been something that's been very odd to hear. But actually, you know, it's just dusk has just been here, and it was the first time around dusk that we heard the children's laughter again, which in a kind of strange way, it's comforting because it was a little bit of normality in what's been quite a bleak day. And also what I think has been amazing today is the resoluteness of the people of Belgium, both citizens and residents alike. I mean, Charles Michel, the Belgian Prime Minister, he issued a statement earlier today calling for solidarity and calm of the people in the wake of such things like that, like of what's happened. And that's what Belgians are doing here. I mean, there's all these amazing initiatives like Ik Wil Helpen, which in Dutch means, which in English means I will help, and Port Ouvert, which is open door, where residents of Brussels are literally opening their doors to people who are otherwise stranded in the wake of these things because public transport's been cut down, or even people who, you know, are scared and don't want to be lonely tonight.
For sure.
People have offered, why don't you come round for a beer and so we can be together. So there's really a feeling of unity here, which I think is really phenomenal considering what type of effects this could have on more people. And
definitely
for me, myself, I love living in Brussels. I mean, we had the lockdowns last year in November, which were pretty trying at times. But again, the resilience of the people here, and, you know, I like to think of my friends included in that. You know, we're not going to stop and like stay inside for prolonged.
Well, it's so good, Sophie, that you can, you and your friends and the people of Brussels in general can come together and not let these terrible people really ruin what is a wonderful city and a country of Belgium. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Sophie. We really appreciate it.
All the best. Pleasure to welcome to the show a gentleman who's gearing up for the first full day of work happening this Friday. Is it Friday?
Well, Saturday. First game is tomorrow. Saturday is first game for the Sydney Swans. And joining us this morning is Brandon Jack. Hello, Brandon.
G'day, guys. Thanks for having me on today.
Hey, thanks for coming in. Got the day off from training?
I do, actually. Get one day off during the week, or I also get to go to uni, which I am missing out on today to be here with you gentlemen.
That's very nice of you to
work. Education's never helped anyone, trust
skip
me.
Skip a shoot. They usually let you skip two for a semester, which is good. What are you doing at uni whilst you're playing AFL?
I'm actually studying a journalism degree, so media communications and a bit of law as well, but really into the journalism side of it right now.
Yeah, right. Oh, very nice. So what sort of stuff are you getting taught in uni at the moment?
Current subject is a graphic design course. I'm learning a bit of animation, Photoshop, which is all completely new to me. But yeah, I love it.
No, it'll come in handy. Trust me, Brandon. You know, Alex, I think, what was the last thing you photoshopped? Your head on top of a Game of Thrones character?
Something like that. It pops
one day.
Up.
One day it'll be helpful.
Yeah, but it's really useful stuff.
You think you're never going to need it, and then someone from Game of Thrones is around, and you think, maybe I'd look good as Jon Snow. Well, that's awesome. What, you know, you're at the Swans, quite a young player. Did quite a few other players whilst playing AFL also have university or some other sort of thing to keep them entertained?
Yeah, it's massive, and the AFL was great in encouraging young players to participate off the field, and we've got a number of guys who are doing uni degrees, and it's something they're really big on at the moment, is getting something outside of football done.
Is that refreshing for you? Because football is getting so much more professional, and like training goes for longer, and you know, nutrition and that side of things. Is it good to have this thing that's totally separate from your playing life?
It is pretty good. I mean, it's a 24/7 job now. You always got to be kind of thinking about your football. But for me, going into that lecture and sitting with people who've got no idea about football is something I look forward to every week. It's a bit, it's a bit refreshing.
They're not in your ear trying to tell you game tips or anything.
It's awesome sitting in the graphic design course. I don't have any idea what's going on, and neither do they. So,
well, you've just had the off season. What did you get up to while you had a little bit of break?
I was in Sydney most of the time. Luckily, got away to Hong Kong with a few of my best mates from the club, which was a good week. And then came back, and my brother Kieran actually hosted Christmas for the first time, which was a bit of a highlight.
Kieran Jack, who is the captain of the Swans, your brother.
He is.
Is it cool playing with your bro?
It's a special thing, actually, being able to play any sport with your brother, but when he's your captain, it's a little bit more special as well.
Right. So is he harder on you?
That tough love, yeah. I think he treats me like another player, but off the field, he's a brilliant older brother and leader. So yeah.
Oh, nice. How was he at Christmas? Did he cook up a good one? What he put up on the spread?
He was stressing big time. His girlfriend Charlotte actually put on a great feed. She cooked pretty much everything you could think of. So it was a lovely day.
Oh, nice. Okay. Well, are we going to play a song here? Do you get into the music as well when you're around the club? Do you, who gets control of the Sydney Swans jukebox in the change rooms?
It's a big honour to actually get on charge of the jukebox. If you play a bad song, the boys will let you know about it. But there's a big variety of music we got there. I don't mind putting my stuff on sometimes.
Okay, oh, excellent. It's good as a young player that you can still, you know, get them on there, because some of the older players, I've had a chat to a few AFL players over the distance, and they start getting into some questionable material, the older lads. So good to have you in the studio, Brandon.
No questionable material here with some Rufus.
And we do have to talk about the upcoming matches, because the team that I grew up supporting, Collingwood Football Club, are playing against your club.
You're even wearing their colours right now.
Sort of. I think this is more of a rugby jumper.
Yeah, same colours, but...
G'day, guys. That was You Are Right by Rufus from the new album In Bloom. My name is Brandon Jack. I'm with Matt and Alex this morning. We're just talking a bit of footy, a bit of life.
Oh, brilliant.
Sure are.
Brandon Jack killing it. I didn't even tell you the name of the album. You were all over it. Rufus, You Were Right. And Brandon plays for the Sydney Swans in it with us this morning. Tomorrow, the first game of the AFL season, the old Tigers versus Blues. And then your mob, the Swans, Brandon, playing this week. And you say Wednesday, it's your day off, and it's the day before teams get selected. You've played about 30 games now, but never actually round one. What's it like when you're still not sure whether you'll make it into the final 22?
Yeah, Wednesday, Thursday are pretty stressful, actually, for a few guys like myself. But look, as you said, never played round one. I'm excited if I get the chance to do that this weekend.
So how do they do it? I mean, is it like the scene in a high school drama where the name gets posted on the chalkboard and everyone sort of crowds around and goes, oh, I didn't make it? Is it like that?
It's almost like that. They have it on a big whiteboard, which they flip over. And if your name's not on there, you're a bit surprised. So it's a bit nervous the couple of minutes beforehand.
Yeah, for sure.
Right.
Oh, well, excellent. Well, hopefully you get a run around this weekend, which will be excellent, playing in my mob, the Pies, who look pretty good in the preseason. I'm not gonna lie.
Oh, you're not going to back down, are you?
They were quite impressive in their NAB games.
What about the preseason for you? Because having done a couple of AFL seasons before in far lower divisions, there's a lot of training going on. What sort of preseason did the Swans have in for this year?
Our preseasons are brutal, to be honest. Mentally, physically, it's 5 days a week, backing up, like we do probably 60, 70 Ks of running a week of high intensity stuff. So it's puts a bit of a toll on your body. But I mean, it's a great thing to do for work.
I always see different, you know, there's always like beach sessions. Or, I mean, there's a standard sort of oval work, but then there's, you know, you hear about these kind of, you know, drop you at a bottom of a mountain kind of thing. What's the
fitness trainer people, they seem to go mad in pre-season. They come up with all sort of wacky things that'll get you.
What's the strangest thing you've had to do so far?
Last year we actually went down to the Goulburn Police Academy and we did a bit of
don't
training
bloody
down there.
Start us on the Goulburn Police Academy.
We were there literally 2 weeks ago getting absolutely smashed by the coppers, flipping tyres, pulling ropes, pushing sleds. It was a nightmare.
40 degree heat.
Similar experience.
You had to do the whole circuit as well.
We did, and we did a bit of scenario stuff as well, see how the guys go under pressure, which was interesting.
Really? Yeah, right. So as in actual kind of criminal scenarios, I guess, or, you know.
They gave us paintball guns and we walked into the hostage situations and we had to see how blokes handled it.
Oh, man. I guess that's tenuously decision-making. Like, there's a lot of decisions on the field of footy. Coach was always on you to make the right one. Did everyone handle it right? A few people crack under the pressure?
There was a few different responses. Blokes kind of crumbled a bit, but we got a lot of feedback from it, actually, and the coaches used it as feedback for, like, how to handle situations on the football field. So it was a good teaching device.
It was incredible. What we didn't realise out at that academy is how intricate the setup is there, where they've got, like, an actual fake police station and then, you know, a little prop neighbourhood and everything like that, just to deal with everyday responses is incredible.
Well, Brandon Jack, thank you so much for popping by this morning. We appreciate you hanging out with us. Best of luck for when the whiteboard flips tomorrow. You will hopefully be on it having a run around.
I can safely say good luck to you guys, Sydney Swans, for the win. If Alex says it, he is lying through his teeth, okay?
Yeah, well, I just hope for a good match. Maybe a draw to start off the season.
Turn it up, mate.
Hopefully not.
Thank you very much for joining us this morning. I'm Alex, that is Matt, and we're both very sad today, waking up to more news of, unfortunately, some horrible people putting some explosions off at the airport in Brussels, as well as the train station, just sort of one after another. And, yeah, we had a chat to a listener earlier on this morning. Her name was Sophie. She lives in Brussels, originally from New Zealand. And, yeah, we were able to talk to her originally about, you know, what's Brussels like as a city usually.
It's a wonderful place in many ways. It's really like a global village. You know, you've got people from all different cultures and nationalities. It's the home of the political capital of Europe. So there's so many EU institutions there. There's different types of professions there. It's a huge melting pot. And so that also means that the airport is frequently used by heavy traffic, and also Maldijk Metro Station. It's right down the road from, you know, the EU institutions. So it's a heavily populated area of people going on their daily commute to work.
Yeah, and it all happened only 4 days after the arrest of the person that they suspected was part of the Paris attacks, Salah Abdeslam.
Yeah, pretty shocking stuff. And Sophie went on to describe what, yeah, the people of Brussels, the people in the city, had to do after the news of the attacks came out.
The Belgian authorities have issued a public announcement that people should stay indoors. I mean, earlier today, in the aftermath of when it happened, 12 hours ago, the first explosion, which was at Brussels Zaventem Airport, and then the second one occurred about an hour later at 9 o'clock, which was during peak rush hour time as well in Brussels. People who were out and about were told to stay put. So, for example, a number of my friends who work in offices around Brussels were sitting inside with their office doors locked all day. And for me, I was still at home, so we've stayed inside for most of the day.
And it happened a bit over 12 hours ago now, and the people of Brussels haven't been able to sleep on it yet. It's still happened at 8 a.m. their time.
Yeah, it's so only about, 9:30 at the moment, it's 10 to 10.
Still the same day, so things are still pretty fresh. And Steph from Camberwell has gotten in touch. What are you up to today, Steph?
I'm just trying to find some clients and friends of mine who are currently in Brussels.
Okay. And
what do you do for a job? Sorry, Steph.
I'm a travel agent.
Okay. And have you been able to get in touch with them at all?
No, not at all. I tried to call them last night. The phones just weren't even going through. I've Facebooked them. Yeah, I haven't been able to get in touch with them at all.
No activity on their Messenger or anything?
No.
Are you in control of their flights and stuff, Steph, and where they're meant to be at particular points?
Yeah, I am. So I'm currently sitting out the front of work waiting to go in to try and find them.
Yeah, goodness. Did this happen similarly a couple of months ago with the Paris attacks?
Yes, we had a couple of people who were in Paris, but they all got in touch and that was fine. But this is sort of a bit of a different situation for me because these guys are actually friends of mine as well.
Okay, and have you had any updates in terms of what information you can provide about travel to or from Brussels?
No, that will all be on my emails when I get in.
Okay, all right, no worries. Well, we wish you all the best with it, Steph. Thanks for getting in touch and having a chat, and we'll have a good day.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
And just there, Kingswood, their ode to the Japanese greeting, Ohio. Hope you're well. Matt and Alex with you. It is a Wednesday. They spelt it wrong, though. They spelt it like the American state.
Yeah, I don't know what.
Is it a city or a
state?
State.
I don't know what Kingswood are doing there.
I never remember which ones are states and which ones are cities.
But Ohio gozaimasu to you, no matter where you are in Australia. Matt and Alex are with you this morning. And given we have a large comedic broadcast happening this Friday, live from the Melbourne Town Hall as part of the International Comedy Festival there, we're going to get a few guests who will be providing you with your stand-up, with your lols. And one of them is joining us this morning from the UK. Good morning, Sarah Pascoe.
Good morning.
Sarah Pascoe, third time at the Melbourne International Comedy Festival this year. You are, you're all prepared?
I've got some tweaking to do on my show.
Right.
But I'm nearly prepared. Don't tell anyone.
Okay.
I'm basically there, I think.
You've navigated Melbourne enough to know where the good places are?
Oh, I love Melbourne. It's so nice to be back here.
You don't want to say what we're trying to get you to say.
Hey guys, shut your mouths. you know nothing about me.
No.
Keep quiet.
It's the third time that you're back. I mean, last time you were here, I remember you were on stage doing Salt and Pepper's Shoop.
Oh yeah, I did dancing. Oh yeah, I was backing dancing.
You've been here.
I remembered that.
You've been here before. Okay.
Yes, so obviously you know all the good places around Melbourne and stuff.
I know a couple of places. What of it?
Renowned for its coffee, Melbourne.
Oh yeah, people do recommend coffee here.
Yep,
always. Telling you to go.
You buy quite a bit of it, don't you, when you're here?
Maybe, just to stay awake.
So it's always good where you can to save a little bit of money on
coffee. Okay, I say one thing off air in confidence, and this is not how I expect to be treated. I've come a long way to do this festival. You better show some respect.
So, Sarah, you've got something you've been keeping in your purse for the last 12 months.
I didn't keep it. Right, okay, I have some loyalty cards for Melbourne coffee shops because, annoyingly, last year I got halfway through and I was too close to the end, maybe three stamps, maybe two stamps from a free beverage. And so I didn't keep them in my purse. I took them out of my purse, kept them with my Australian phone, popped them back in 3 days ago. And next week it's going to be raining free lattes.
It's been a year since you've been in Melbourne. The shop's probably shut down. They probably updated the cards.
I've had that before. I filled out a whole thing. I was getting ready for coffee and toast, and I went up to the shop and they'd closed that week. I was devastated.
I think the loyalty card is a legally binding contract, so no matter what is there, I need a free thing. But even if it's selling Wellingtons, I'm like, give me a Wellington. I've invested in this. I've kept these for 11 months. I've been teased about it on the radio.
Well, it is good to be back. Do you enjoy Melbourne outside of your coffee drinking habits?
I really love Melbourne. It's really great because they bring over like a few British comics. So there's people that I know from home and we get to hang out more. And then I get to meet and see lots of kind of new comedy from Australians and Americans and people that I wouldn't get to see at home. So I really love it.
Yeah, well, you're going to be jumping up on stage as part of Good As Friday. We like to do special sort of events every, you know, all the time on Triple J. Last week we were looking at the body, Sarah Pascoe.
Yeah,
we're just looking at, you know, what makes you feel self-conscious, what are you proud of, how the body works, people, you know, who are willing to abuse their body to look excellent. You've got some pretty solid views on the body.
Well, I've just written a book, thank you. So I've just written a book about the female body, which is kind of an extension of the show that I did in Melbourne last year. And I'm just about to start a book about the male body because there's loads of really interesting stuff, obviously, about men as well.
Like what?
What about men?
Well, women, first of all, you've written so far.
So it's really interesting. So, we evolved to have fat deposits in a way that no other mammal has. So, like, we have fat on our chests. I don't know if you've noticed. And pretty popular.
I try not to sometimes.
and so no other mammal has them, and you don't have to have them to breastfeed. And it's basically a combination of natural and sexual selection. So that's quite interesting. And the whole of the female shape in terms of and you'll have heard about the kind of like the waist breast hip ratio being a demonstration of how much estrogen the woman has and how likely she is to conceive and things like that, and things that are kind of true of all beauty in terms of symmetry and how people, when they do tests, they show how we compartmentalize each other's bodies and what we remember about people. So it's a really interesting topic.
Why?
And so,
I was just going to ask why the fatty deposits on the chest? Then is there any reason behind it?
Oh no! There's loads of theories. So it's interesting because it's one of those things that science doesn't have a definitive answer. In the 70s, they used to say that women grew them because men liked them. It was like this circular argument. Like they were like, oh, men like them, so that must be why they grew them, right? Over millions of years.
And tell you what, if it's that easy to grow things just because liked it, I'd be
be careful what you get into. Like, what? They want third arms now, for gosh sake. But they think that it could be to do with the shape, because our face shape and our head shape changed when the brain got much, much bigger than the other apes over millions of years. So they think it might be to do with latching. But they also think that because fatty deposits are a sign that in times of lean, food scarcity, that having fat deposits means that you could still feed a child and you could be kind of healthily pregnant, that there's kind of a sign there. And also, this is quite early in the day to talk about this, but the kind of breasts are a really good indicator of youth and fertility because after you've breastfed, they get saggier. So it's actually a quite good way of determining how fertile a woman is.
Yeah, goodness.
Because obviously we wouldn't used to have wear clothes and stuff.
I'm very intrigued to know what you've learned about the male body
well. Sarah Pascoe, up next. We're going to play a song first, Sarah. This is Remy, new music from him. It's called For Good and features, as a few tracks have been recently, Sampa the Great. Here it is for you on Triple J. Sarah Pascoe sticking with us. 70 minutes past 8. Good morning. Cruisy new one from Remy. What do you think of that, Matt?
God, he's all over the place, isn't he? And Sampa the Great's all over the place. Great collab. For Good is the name of it. Hope you're well. Matt and Alex joining on this Wednesday morning. We are chatting at the moment to Sarah Pascoe, who's one of the comedians who'll be joining us for Melbourne International Comedy Festival. Triple J's Good Ass Friday, this Friday at Melbourne Town Hall. Kicks off at 12. Sarah, you were in the middle of, you're about to tell us a few facts about the male body, because you have written a book about the female body, and you're heading into the male body territory in a new book now.
Yes.
What's something interesting that we probably don't know about the male body?
Okay, well, the most interesting thing, and this is mind-blowing and really gross, is that men have taste buds on their testicles.
What?
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah, like, I promise. That's... Look it up. It's no true.
I've never heard that.
I know. That's why I'm telling you, because it's not something I think you'd already know.
Well, if that was true, wouldn't everyone tell everyone? It'd be crazy.
Well, I really think that's what needs to start happening. We need to pass this on. Like, everyone tell 5 people. Just email or text your friends.
All right. You're telling me if I dip my nuts in a pav, I could taste fruit.
No, I don't think that's how it works, and don't do that.
Certainly not before everyone else has had some.
Also, what is it? A pav? Is that short for Pavlova?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, okay. Okay.
Good, you know, now, just in case when anyone offers you some.
Yeah. No, thank you.
Are you friends with Matt O'Kine? Yeah. And they go, yes. And go, I'll be fine, thanks. I've already eaten.
Honestly, explain this taste buds situation.
I just think it's one of those kind of body byproducts. So it's not like you can literally taste. And I think apparently people have them in their intestines as well and some other places in the body. So I've just started researching, but that's like my favourite thing so far.
Is it on the outside or on the inside?
On the outside. But I think the most fascinating thing is how, like, so testosterone, so men get testosterone twice in their lives, like get flooded with it, once in the womb, which is what kind of changes them from having a female basic form into having a male form. But in the olden days, they used to think that men were the basis and women didn't have enough warmth in the womb, and that if a woman got really angry and heated up in an argument... I don't know if I can say this, but if she got really heated up, then she would shout, and then her penis would fall out, that it would emit itself. That's what I used to think in the olden days.
What? You're writing books about this?
Yeah, it's fun.
Oh, goodness me. Well, Sarah, we appreciate that one.
Yeah, thank you for that.
And we better let you go. We've got the news coming up, and, you know, it's obviously quite a sad morning, particularly with Brussels. The UK is where you're from as well. A lot of people talking about reminiscent of the London attacks, the footage of people coming off the trains in Brussels as well.
Yeah.
How do you go, being a comedian yourself, how do you go marrying these two, you know, obviously disparate things together?
Well, that's it. There's people, I mean, and we all know them, who are really great at either kind of straight out there with the darkest jokes, and they kind of find humour in things straight away. And I remember someone once saying, I think it was like after September the 11th, like that, well, that's when you find out when the great comedians are, because they're talking about it that night. Mm. And I'm the exact opposite, where I feel like I need to percolate something for ages and kind of listen before you kind of go out giving your opinion on half of the information. But I do think essentially, like, obviously, I'm not to like big up our job, but laughter is a coping mechanism for people at all times, and you can't help it sometimes, finding humour in dark things. But I think, when these things are happening at the moment, people are really kind of thrown and really sympathetic and empathetic for the people it's happening to.
Definitely. And
mostly,
it's great. You see with these things the best in people as well as, coming after the worst in
course,
people, which is always really nice to see in something like this. Ruby Jones will be giving you the updates on it very soon. But Sarah, I'm so excited
Thank
to have you.
You
at Good As Friday this Friday.
Yeah, me too. See you Friday.
At the Melbourne Town Hall. You'll be able to hear Sarah doing her stand-up comedy. And if you want to go see her show Animal, it's on at the Melbourne Town Hall for the rest of the Melbourne International Comedy Festival as well.
Sarah, you're the best. Thank you so much.
See you guys. Bye.
Breakfast with Matt and Alex on Triple J.